Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
What a night! What a night! It's the kind of night in sports on Wednesday that geeks me out. I turn into this big kid, like a kid on Christmas Eve, or I guess Christmas Day, because we got to open the gifts. I love this kind of stuff. I love the drama of this time of the year, where the stakes are higher than ever, and every moment could be a game changer, could be a series changer. I love the teams that come back from the brink of elimination. I love game sevens, and I love the storylines with the twist that you never saw coming. And that's kind of where we are in not just the two NBA series that are still alive and kicking, and we'll get to that, but also in the Stanley Cup final. I mean, seriously, think about this. This is the stuff that movie scripts are made of. You've got one team in its very first year of existence who will be hosting the Stanley Cup final. The opener, when the puck drops on Monday night, will be in Las Vegas a year after that franchise was created, a year after it was founded, with a passionate fan base that has rallied around the team, this love affair that has grown and grown, that they're definitely still in the newlywed period, the newlywed stage, the honeymoon period. But also, digging a little deeper than that, what the team and its success has meant to a city that was hurting, that was broken, that was devastated in the wake of the Mandalay Bay shooting. We've seen that narrative in sports many times. And I'm just going to name a few, but Houston and New Orleans and Boston, right? Those are just a few. And so you can't overstate the impact of the Golden Knights on everything that is Las Vegas, from its citizens to its economy to its healing. That team is hosting the opener of the Stanley Cup final against a team that has no cup in its history, though it's 43 years deep into its existence. Amazing. One of these teams will win a Stanley Cup for the first time.
Oh, my!
But their paths couldn't be more different. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in on your Thursday morning. We are now down to the final two in the NHL. And I tell you what, if you ever questioned Alex Ovechkin in the past, if you ever felt like he wasn't good enough to win a big one, he wasn't enough of a leader, he didn't set the tone for his guys, he was nothing more than a goal scorer, then think again. Yes, he does score, but man, he also wins.
A hit at center as Kunitz was hit shoulder to shoulder by Tom Wilson, ahead on the right side, and now Kuznetsov across to Ovechkin. He scores! He scores! 1 minute and 2 seconds into game seven. The great eight has made it 1-0 Washington! The Caps with a puck toward Christian Juice. Bounced up on him. If he'd gotten into the blue line, there was nobody in front of him. Tampa pinching a little bit. Now the puck ahead to Burakovsky. Andre coming down the middle. A shot. He scores. Andre Burakovsky does it again. He got behind the defense and he kept it low. 3:29 to go in the second. And you can see Nevada from here. It's 3-0 Washington.
John Walton with the fantastic calls on the Capitals radio network. And credit Alex Ovechkin not only for a goal 62 seconds into game seven that quieted the crowd in Tampa, but also for the tone that he set going back to the end of game five and then in game six, where he was delivering hits and his intensity had to be matched by the guys on his team. Even at the beginning of game seven, after he scores and the Capitals have the one goal lead, which is nothing in the NHL, especially against the Bolts, who scored more goals in the league this year than any other team. You're talking about a potent offense most of the time, just not in game 6 or 7. So a one-goal lead is nothing. There's a big fight that breaks out in the first period. And Ovechkin's out there, his helmet's off, his jersey's all askew, his eyes are steely. I mean, he's right in the middle of it all. So Ovechkin deserves a ton of credit for setting the tone, the fire, the passion, the intensity, the commitment, the character, the leadership. And he also has that snipe with a minute gone by in the first period that, I mean, just that lights your team on fire. If any one of the early chances for the Bolts had gone in, maybe this looks different. But then you have Braden Holtby to contest with, and he was brilliant. First and second shutouts of the entire season, right? Remember, this guy didn't even start the playoffs for the Washington Capitals. He took over in game number 2. But Braden Holtby comes up with a shutout in game 6 and a shutout in game 7. And there were a couple of saves where I felt like he was doing his best impersonation of a superhero. Pick a superhero, any superhero. There was one particular moment, though. I mean, he had glove save after glove save of these incredible shots coming at full speed. But also there's one moment, I think it was in the third period, where the puck actually gets between his legs. It's between his knees. It's about to squirt out behind him and into the back of the net. And he closes his skates. So it's like a yoga move. He had no idea where the puck was, but he's trying to tighten everything up. So he closes his skates, and it's literally the skate that prevents the puck from going behind him and from getting into the back of the net, you know, across the goal line into the back of the net. So he was impressive. And to hear him talk about this team and what's special about this team, it jumped out at me.
I haven't been on a team like this where in any situation we're confident and confident in each other. Don't get down on each other. It's just it's a strong group. And that's extremely hard to come by and something that we're going to need to have moving forward to be our best at that, being a strong team.
And I'm really happy for this group because the playoffs are fun. They're not fun. And they've got to the sort of the next level, and they realize that they're not going to be defined by anything that they've done and or not done in the past. It's how they live their life, what they do, how they inspire people. That has been my message all the time. But they wanted this game. There is no question.
Barry Trotz, the head coach, who's certainly going to be in the Hall of Fame, gets to his first Stanley Cup final, as does Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom and the Capitals fan base, long-suffering, lots of really high-profile and painful failures, and yet they're back for the first time in 20 years. And we'll have a chance to win their first ever Stanley Cup. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. I enjoyed the heck out of Game 7. And so a lot of traffic on our social media tonight, but asking you, what are the best two words in sports? So put together the best two-word phrase in sports. To me, it is Game 7. The walk-off is a close second. And walk-off can apply in a lot of cases. But, man, Game 7 just gets my blood pumping, whether we're pre-game 7, whether we're in the middle of it, man, the tension, or whether we're post-game 7, and you get a storyline like this, the thrill of victory, as well as the agony of defeat, the incredible emotion on both sides, the drama of it all. So for me, it's game 7, but you guys are cracking me up with your two-word phrases, your two words in sports that you think go along with game 7. Some guy said butt fumble. And then I think I looked at his Twitter avatar, and it was something to do with the Patriots, which would make sense. So, yeah, there's been some really good ones. Sudden death is another fantastic one, though that only applies to a couple of sports. But, yeah, your best two words in sports, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page. Love to hear your initial reaction to this matchup between the Golden Knights and the Capitals. In our first hour of the show, we had a really neat perspective from a former NHL goalie. So Brent Johnson used to play for the Capitals and the Penguins, actually, where he was the backup to Marc-Andre Fleury. and that was where he ended his career, was in Pittsburgh. And so he knows Flower really well, but also is extremely familiar with the Capitals, having played there and now working for NBC Sports Washington. And it was really neat to talk to him when he got done with his post-game show. So if you missed that interview, it was from our first hour. It's podcasted after hours, amylawrence.com. So that's on the ice. In hoops, we had the pivotal, critical, crucial, oh-so-important Game 5. Now, I know Game 5 doesn't incite quite the same emotion as a Game 7, but these are important, the Game 5s in both the East and West Finals in the NBA, because 83% of the time in a tie series, the winner of Game 5 goes on to advance to the next round.
Nerd alert.
Now, why is the number 83 one that maybe sticks in the craw of Cleveland fans and certainly the Cleveland locker room? Because that was all that the Cavaliers could muster in game number 5 in Boston.
It's a lie.
No, it's actually the truth. 83 points. 83 points. Do you know through the first quarter, it was only LeBron and Kevin Love who had buckets. I think there
I'm
was
sorry.
Out of the starting lineup in the first half, there was maybe one guy who had a couple of free throws. That was it. It was so bad. It was worst case scenario for the Cleveland offense, because Kevin Love hit some shots early, but then faded late. LeBron only had 2 points in the fourth quarter. I know that he was tired because he's carrying the load, but also there was no help. If it's not LeBron, it's got to be somebody else, and there wasn't anybody else. There was one spurt in the second quarter, and that was after the technicals were assessed, the skirmish between Marcus Morris and Larry Nance Jr. and then Terry Rozier kind of rushing in there, where the Cavaliers seemed to have some life, and you got a bucket from, you know, Jordan Clarkson, and you had a bucket from Larry Nance, and maybe there was a bucket from Kyle Korver, who weirdly enough didn't play a ton of minutes. He doesn't look quite right, but also he gets abused in that defensive battle with Jason Tatum. And so there just wasn't enough. And so for Cleveland, this is the worst case scenario, to have nothing else out there except for LeBron James, who can consistently score, because it also makes it a little easier for the defense. And so to see how the team kind of failed to take advantage of its opportunities late in the game when it was kind of right there for the taking. Why? Because the Celtics offense was abysmal too. They couldn't hit the broadside of the barn for most of this game and shot 37%, I think, for the game. And so their offense wasn't great, but the Cavaliers couldn't muster a challenge, and that included LeBron.
But I think everybody at this point is tired. Worn down or whatever the case may be, but you know, still trying to make plays to help our team win, put us in position to win. And we had moments, we had an opportunity, but we didn't make enough plays.
What is it that won the game for the Celtics? Well, it was pretty obvious that it was defense. And where did you hear what Brad Stevens had to say about their defense? It's the quote of the night. It's coming up, and plus the NFL's new national anthem policy as well. Getting some of your reaction there. We've got the best two words in sports. You're blowing up my Twitter, which is fun. A-Law Radio, how do you feel about the Stanley Cup final matchup between two teams that desperately want to hoist the cup? All of that is part of this show. It's been a doozy. Really enjoyed it. These are the kind of nights and the kind of shows that I love. The PGA Tour's top golfers, including John Rahm, Webb Simpson, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, take on the Colonial Country Club at the Fort Worth Invitational this weekend on CBS. You don't want to miss it. It's a great time of the year in sports, a lot of different sports. Memorial Day weekend's marked by a ton of different sports events and games that I'm really looking forward to. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Rozier, offensive end, lob. Horford throws it down with two hands, and finally, a two-minute run of Game 5 in the fourth quarter that was scoreless ends with a thunderous slam from Al Horford. Relief from the 18,624 and a timeout from Ty Lue. Rozier, stop and start on Hill. Moves to his left, draws a double team. Kick out Horford, three in the air. Got it!
Ooh, big Al! That's money time.
When it matters most, 15 and 12 for Al Horford here in Game 5. Celtics by 17.
At home, one of the big things is I truly believe is our fans. It's, you know, I feel like our guys feed off of them, you know, and really just drives us as a group.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Al Horford's got a point. The Celtics are 10-0 at the Garden at home in the postseason. They're 10-0, but they've got just a single win on the road in these playoffs. Some of that is about the youth. They have stretches where they've struggled offensively, both home and away, but the defense at home has been brilliant. And that's kind of been where the pendulum swings in this series. Whichever team bears down and plays, you know, the defense like they should with the intensity and the aggressiveness and the real focus, that's the team that ends up winning. Just here we go, pendulum swinging back to Cleveland on Friday night. Though this time, the Celtics just need one more win to make the NBA Finals for the first time since 2010. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. Going to get to your calls here, 855-212-4227. A lot of you weighing in on Twitter and Facebook with a bunch of different things. The Stanley Cup Final, the basketball game, the NFL's new anthem policy, and also the best two words in sports. Which one of these things is not like the other? My favorite soundbite from last night's action, with my apologies to the emotion from the Washington Capitals locker room, comes from Brad Stevens, because he coined a word that I've never heard before. He's right about the defense and how the Celtics won this game. They had 10 steals, and they really took advantage of the turnovers by the Cavaliers. So 15 Cavs turnovers. LeBron was held to just 2 fourth-quarter points. They were really packing down hard on him and forced him into some bad mistakes. And so Brad Stevens, after the game, was raving about the D.
Our guys have hung their hat on the defensive end of the floor, and it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of teamness. We were not the more connected team in Cleveland. That bothered us all, I think, and we wanted to come out and defend well.
It takes a lot of teamness. I mean, I like it. I know exactly what he's talking about. I've just never heard it before. Can we potentially Google teamness?
And it takes a lot of teamness.
And see if anything comes up. That's a new drop.
Way
we're keeping
ahead of you.
That.
Did it right away. There's nothing that comes up.
Nothing that comes
not
up.
Not even like an Urban Dictionary. Not like a casual definition. Nothing. Nobody's heard of that.
This is a Brad Stevens-ism. I like it. I'm going to do it. Strategery, I think, was first used by President George W. Bush, and it's one of my favorite words when it comes to battle plans. Strategery.
Takes a lot of teamness.
So I'm going to use this word from Brad Stevens, and you will forever know where it came from. It takes a lot of teamness. Uh-huh. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's do the injury report brought to you by the Salt Institute and take a look at the latest injury that could really affect the Western Conference Finals, which will be back on court on Thursday night. You know, forward Andre Iguodala missed game 4 with what is a leg bruise, kind of a banged knees with James Harden, I think it was, late in game number 2. He did travel with the team to Houston. So both teams departed the Bay Area on Wednesday morning and went back to Houston for game 5 tonight. He did participate in parts of Wednesday's practice as well with the Warriors. He's still officially questionable for game 5, but head coach Steve Kerr has indicated he's feeling better, he's making progress, and that they're hoping he can play today. They just don't know yet. And that's huge, because Andre started or played in all of the victories for the Warriors over the Rockets this season. That includes regular season. But without him, not only is the bench shorter, but they miss his one-on-one defense and that rebounding. He brings a lot of intensity. Remember, we're talking about a former NBA Finals MVP. Without him, the Warriors look a whole lot different, and the options for Coach Kerr are significantly reduced. So he's still a question mark. We'll find out when Thursday's Game 5 tips off at the home of the Rockets, the Toyota Center. Did you ever wonder why EMTs and hospitals usually administer a saline drip to patients? Well, that's because sodium and water are essential to human survival. Everything is better with a little salt. You can find out why at alittlesalt.org. I would agree with that. Everything's better with a little salt water. 855-212-4227. Scott is listening in Georgia. Scott, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
How are you doing, Amy?
I'm good.
Oh, I just wanted to tell you that it's good to hear somebody who actually knows what the heck they're talking about.
Sometimes.
You deal with some people on the radio that think they do, and really they just make an end of making a fool of themselves.
I do that sometimes, too.
My two words are my favorite ones is Amy Lawrence.
No, stop it. Come on.
No, seriously, because I've got, like, plenty of, not to sound sexist or anything, but a lot of females that I watch football with who think they know what they're talking about.
Well, maybe you should teach them then. If they don't know, then teach them what they need to know.
I've tried. You just don't understand. But now this thing with the NFL, I'm a college guy. I like college football, and I've stopped watching pros ever since this protest and this stuff has come along. I mean, because it's more or less like it's political, and it's more or less like an agenda more than just a game, because normally people on Sundays want to watch football to get away from all the political stuff, the
bad news. So you're saying that's why it's turned you off to it, is because it's political, not necessarily because of the protest?
Oh, no. Not because of the protest. I mean, everybody's got a right to protest. I'm just... If you want to protest, if you want to do your thing, there's a certain place, a certain time. And like I said, people just want to watch football to get away.
Some people do.
All that stuff.
Yep. Just out of curiosity, do you have any guy friends who don't know anything about football?
You ain't kidding.
It has nothing to do with gender.
No, it has nothing to do with gender. I'm just saying you as a female is a very... What do you call it?
No. Me as a human being, I'm very knowledgeable as a human being goes.
Well, if you knew the people I've got, you'd know what I'm talking about.
Okay, I'm just trying to remind you that you also have male friends who don't know their football either.
Oh, yeah, they're just as stupid as they are. So.
Oh, no. It's not about stupid. It's about not knowing the game. It takes some time to understand. You have to actually care. Some people just don't care about football. So that's.
Well, some people are bandwagon jumpers, and that's the whole thing that really gets it rolling.
Well, that's Isaac. All right, Scott.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it in Georgia. Can I just tell you what happened behind the scenes here? Because we don't have a camera in our studio. As soon as Scott says some people are bandwagon jumpers, Isaac reached both hands up in the air like he was signaling a field goal.
Go Rams.
Well, I thought that you were a Patriots guy. Or you know what? You said Eagles earlier.
Sorry.
Make up your mind. Which is it, Isaac? You got to pick one.
No one wanted us.
I'll go with Alabama. Roll Tide.
Oh my God,
baby.
You're such a dope. Seriously, Isaac doesn't even watch sports. Actually, I'm very proud of Isaac. He started watching the NBA playoffs a couple of weeks early this year. Usually he waits until the finals.
I might even tune into the NHL Stanley Cup finals.
Wow.
It's a lot of drama there.
I'm ready over
here. It's like we're supposed to give him a raise for that or something, for watching sports.
You know, his two favorite words in sports he said to me earlier were Tom Brady. You guessed Jared Goff. You were so close. It's actually Tom Brady. That's his answer.
Just gross. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence coming up next. We'll get more of your national anthem policy responses and a lot of your two words in sports. We're heading up toward the top. Good morning to you.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Clearly, our objective as a league and to all 32 clubs, which was unanimous, is that we want people to be respectful at the national anthem. We want people to stand. That's all personnel, and make sure that they treat this moment in a respectful fashion. That's something that we think we owe. We think that we've come up with a balanced process here and a procedure and policy that will allow those players who feel that they can't stand for the anthem to stay in the locker room. And there's no penalty for that, but we are going to encourage all of them to be on the field. We'd like all of them to be on the field and stand at attention.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell announcing the new national anthem policy. To me, it's wishy-washy, like the league is attempting to please everybody, and it just feels over the top and a whole lot of attention for no reason. And I get it. The league is concerned about its bottom line. That's why they're trying to please everyone and come up with a solution that was amenable to as many people as possible. But when you think about the small minority of players, the small percentage of players in the NFL who were protesting at the end of last year and who planned on protesting moving forward, seems like much ado over an issue that really isn't that big of a deal. And I'm not referring to why the players protest before you freak out. I'm referring to the fact that it's, what, 6-7%? And yet all this attention and all of this time spent, I would have just left the policy the way that it is. But the owners decided they wanted to come up with some way to address it. They wanted a unanimous front. And so they spent hours and hours and hours and hours going over it and trying to figure out what to do. And what they came up with is that you have to stand if you're on the field. You have the option of not being out there. If you choose not to stand during the presentation of the colors and the flag and the national anthem, then you can go back in the locker room. But if you're on the field, you have to stand. You have to show respect by standing. I mean, I don't like the fact that it forces the players to choose between being out there with their teammates and going back in the locker room. There will be fines, according to the NFL, if there's anyone who's out there on the field, on the sidelines, who doesn't stand. And we know the commissioner has the power under this behavioral policy to hand out punishments if he sees fit. So we'll see. We'll see how much of a big deal it is moving forward. I mean, I used the analogy of the NBA last night. They have a strict policy about standing during the presentation of the flag and the anthem. And yet there are many players in the NBA who are socially active and who are activists themselves. So maybe it won't be a big deal. Maybe it will. I'm not sure. To me, this, again, it feels like it creates more potential loopholes and is a lot of time spent on something that really isn't that important and doesn't affect the majority of the league. But there certainly was an emotional reaction to it with fans, and it's continued every time I bring it up. Every single time there's a visceral reaction. So maybe that's why the owner spent so much time going over it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I wanted to let you hear from Tyrod Taylor. One of the complaints from the players is that it didn't affect that many people, or that the protesting wasn't coming from that many people. So why all the attention, kind of like what I just said? And then Tyrod Taylor expressed something else that we heard, including from the union chief, Damaris Smith, that the players themselves weren't part of this particular process.
To make a decision that strong, you would hope that the players have input on it, but obviously not. That's what we have to deal with as players, not a good or a bad thing, but at the end of the day, they call the shots and make the rules, so that's what we have to abide by. And I think the main thing out of all of it is that each ball club is having open communication with the players and the ownership about the issues that are going on in the community and trying to change it. And I know Mr. Jim and Mrs. D. Haslam, even the team that I came from in Buffalo, they've been proactive about the situation and trying to do things in the community. So I think that should be the focus now, and hopefully it is moving forward.
So Tyrod Taylor essentially saying, you know, our owner, our franchise is working behind the scenes to try to address what we feel like is really important in terms of social injustice and social inequality, but still felt like the players should have been consulted. Now, to be fair to the NFL, they did have a couple of forums and meetings with players in the past. Remember, they committed nearly $8 or $9 million. It was close to 10 to go ahead and try to take a strong stance, to go ahead and put their money where their mouth is, to say these things are important to our players, so they're important to us. We'll put money into these initiatives and causes and organizations that we feel like can affect change. And so the NFL has done that in the past, just didn't consult the teams or the players in this particular 3-day period. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. If you go to geico.com in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Let's talk to Curtis, who's in Las Vegas. Curtis, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hi, Amy. My name is Curtis, and I listen to you every evening.
Cool.
First time calling in.
Thank you, sir.
You know, the thing that amazes me about this whole thing, Amy, is that there was a perfect way to take care of this. because prior to 2009, the national anthem was played without the players being on the field. And so consequently, they could have merely gone back to the process of playing the national anthem before the players were on the field. But they neglected to go that route, and the reason they neglected to go that route is because of Donald Trump.
Sir, I'm sorry, we don't do politics on this show. You're right, they neglected to go that route. I would say, though, just as to present the other side of it, and again, I'm not going to go political, but there are some people who want to be out there and stand for the anthem. Maybe you're familiar with Alejandro Villanueva, who's a former Army Ranger who plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's so important to him to be out there when the flag is being honored and displayed. And I think of also Adam Vinatieri, whose brother is in active service or was a couple years ago. And there are a lot of people who want to be out there and who want to stand during the anthem and who want to respect the flag in the way that, you know, they feel like is fit. You know, you see a lot of players who get emotional sometimes when the anthem is played because they recognize they have the freedom to play football for a living and in what they believe is the greatest country in the world. I always felt like it was a really proud moment for me before a game when I got to stand and put my hand over my heart for the national anthem. So there's that consideration too. There are a lot of people, I would say the majority of athletes, who want to have that moment.
Well, you know, the thing is, this will still bring attention to the people that are protesting because they would be the people that are not on the field. So I don't really see how this solves the problem.
Well, I would agree with that. I feel like it's pretty wishy-washy myself. And you're right. There may end up being other issues here. We know the Jets owner has indicated he'll pay for any fines if his players want to protest on the field. So I'd agree with you there. I'm not sure it solves a whole lot. As I said before, I feel like the policy was fine as it is. They recommend you stand, but they don't. It's not a hard and fast rule. And it was so few guys that were doing it that it just, yeah, to me, it wasn't necessary to go this route. So I'd agree with you on that.
But you will still have a concerted effort to show the players that do not go out on the field or provide the names of the players that do not go out on the field. And therein, those players become protesters. And so I think this whole idea of having them stay inside and avoid being protesters is ridiculous. Because it just brings more attention to them.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly feel like for a while, at least, the media will definitely highlight it. So I agree with you there, Curtis. Thank you so much for your phone call for the first time from Vegas. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye now.
Leonard is listening in Boston. Leonard, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm good.
My two words would be world champion.
Oh, yeah, that's sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I agree that everyone should stand up during the national anthem, but I look at it from a different point of view is that I've been in labor for over 40 years, and this is strictly a violation of the collective bargaining agreement. Reason being is that a company policy cannot supersede a contract. And if it has anything to do with discipline or money or anything like that, then it has to be collectively bargained.
So you're saying that the NFL can't enforce a policy change or a company change like this without going through the CBA?
Correct. If they want to do it, they can open the contract up and say, let's negotiate it.
Got it.
But while they can have a company policy that doesn't discipline or doesn't fine anyone, that's all right. But if there's anything that has to do with discipline or fines, then that's a violation of the CBA.
Mm. So the policy itself, the owners can ratify. What you're saying is they can ratify, they can change this policy like they can make a rule change, but the part about fining or disciplining is not something that they can enforce. Interesting.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. That. And also, a quick nerd alert for you. Jason Tatum has now moved him to second place over Magic Johnson for scoring the most points during the playoff as a rookie. Mm-hmm. I think it was 229 points. They mentioned that yesterday during the game.
Yeah. Yep. He's actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, past three guys in last night's game with his 24. And you're right, is up to fourth in a single postseason for a rookie in terms of points scored. So he's been amazing. And I tweeted this last night with a couple of crying, laughing emojis, the fact that there was actually somebody out there who didn't think he was all rookie first team. I mean, he's been phenomenal.
Yeah.
But you know what? The other coaches in the NBA didn't vote for Brad Stevens as a coach of the year either. So everybody's got their own.
That's amazing.
They'd rather have other hardware, I guess. So, Leonard, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Have a good day, Amy.
Neil is in Maryland. Neil, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Thank you, Amy. I love your laugh.
Well, I know it grates at a lot of people, but I can't do anything about it. It comes with the territory.
And I get your joke.
It's you.
Long time. That guy almost stole my thunder. My two words were Olympic champion.
Oh, very nice. You know, someone else tweeted to me world record earlier, and instantly I was like, yes, the Olympics. I mean, that's what gets us all engaged. Absolutely. That's
so
awesome.
I'm heading to Western New York on the road for some golf.
Oh, I'm
for
jealous.
A nice retreat weekend. So thanks for all you do.
Are you going to be watching sports on your retreat weekend, or this is like completely golf?
No, what is the TV? I don't have any idea.
Well, at least you got the radio, Neil.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. Gabriel is listening in Atlanta. Gabriel, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
How you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Okay. My two words are game winner. Okay. And I want to agree with some of the owners that are willing to pay the fines or whatever. I think they shouldn't have changed the policy. And you say it's only 7% of the people that...
Roughly. By the end of last year, there were fewer guys that were protesting. For instance, Malcolm Jenkins wasn't doing it anymore because the NFL had agreed to donate so much money. And so it was fewer guys. And that's kind of what some of the NFL players were saying yesterday, too, with the new policy change, is that it affected so few people that it just felt like it was a ridiculous exercise to change the policy.
In my eyes, that's kind of sad because of the reason they was doing it. And, you know, until you go to a funeral of a guy, a 13-year-old kid that was killed for a mistaken bike incident, you know, I think we should make a lot of changes in America because...
Well, of course. That's not... No one is on the other side of that, Gabe. I mean, we're all human beings, right? So those kinds of things are heartbreaking. I don't think you're going to find anybody out there who doesn't believe that there are social injustices and inequalities in the United States. And if they do, they're on an island by themselves. We all understand that the United States of America has a lot of things to fix. If you're paying attention, you get it. That's not what the NFL is saying by changing the policy. Unfortunately, and I've said this over and over, the players can protest and they can try to draw awareness, but the reaction they can't control. And in this particular reaction, it's been visceral because of how they protest. It's not about what they're protesting. It's about how they're doing it. And so that's where the emotions have come in. And I know that's what the NFL is trying to avoid. They want to make everybody happy, and it just doesn't work that way. But Gabriel, thank you so much. We're up against the clock here, but I appreciate your call from Atlanta. Yeah, I said this earlier, and I will say it again. If the protests made one person more aware, or two people more aware, or three, or it changed four or five hearts, then it's worth it. It's not what they're protesting that gets people upset. The majority of people who are upset about it are just upset about how it's done and feeling like it's disrespectful to the anthem and the flag. So we'll see if this changes anything moving forward. We're back tonight after the West Finals. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.